Good morning, everyone. Oh, it looks like we have a couple more folks jumping in right now, so I'll just wait for 1 second. All right. Keep getting new people jumping in. So just wanted to hold off talking until looked like everybody was in there. So good morning, everybody. Welcome to our August Disability Absence Management meeting, or as we have fondly adopted the name, our DAM meeting. I'm glad to have you all here. Hope everybody has had a great summer, and I know the school year is upon those of you who have school age kids, so it feels like it's quickly coming to an end. So with that, today we really wanted to accomplish a couple things, sort of good of the order staffing information, as well as going through just some reminders as it relates to things that are COVID specific. So we're going to cover those things for today. And as always, kind of leaving it up to all of you to let us know if there's other questions or topics that you're hoping that we can cover. But most importantly for today, and most sadly, today is going to be Tracy's last DAM meeting with us here at the county. I think probably most of you already know, but September 3rd is her last day. So this is our big send-off, bon voyage. So please feel free to throw your comments in the chat. As always, we're recording, so Tracy can take it with her if she feels like she wants to refresh on COVID protocols or hear the nice things that people have to say. And obviously, if anyone wants to jump in and say something even live and in person, we would love that. So for start, just to touch on the staffing pieces, there's a few changes beyond Tracy's departure. So she now has an official replacement who is a new face to us here on the DAM meeting. So Patty Dowdy is going to be Tracy's replacement, and she'll be filling in on all of our future DAM meetings in the capacity that Tracy is, as well as the roles that Tracy had formerly in her position. So welcome to Patty. We're happy to have you. And also within Disability Management Division, I'm sad to say that Barbara Elliott, who was with us here at the county for a brief time, has departed. She got a really fantastic offer up in Contra Costa, and she has family that are up there, and it was really a hard decision for her. She really loved working for the County of Ventura, but it just was a great opportunity and took her closer to her family and long-term friends. So she is keeping in touch with us. We've agreed that we will continue to be shared resource points for one another, but certainly just for those of you who are working with her, she is no longer with us. Jess is, of course, still here doing it all in DMD at the moment. And hopefully in the not too distant future, we will have a full-time replacement for Barbara. And additionally, wanted to say that although not here today because she's doing new employee orientation, on the work comp side of risk management, we now have Rebecca Grajeda is now the partner to Dorothy Davis in our risk analyst team. So we will be posting onto the internet and sending out to agencies an indication this week as to who you're assigned to. Most likely, if you previously had Dorothy, you still have Dorothy. And if you previously had Julie Miller as your designated risk analyst, as a general rule, that's going to remain the same. A couple small minor changes, but we will get that out to you as well. So other than almost every name and face and seat changing, we are, I think, ready to kick things off. And we wanted to start off today talking about the California Department of Public Health order that currently applies to healthcare workers and congregate care, congregate setting facilities that many of our county employees are now subject to make sure those of you who have those implications are clear on how some of the processes are going to work. So I'm going to turn it over to Tracy, and she's going to go over that piece with you.
Good morning, everybody. So yes, I will be going over what we've done in BCHRP to help you track the new order. orders, since there were multiple orders. And I'm just going to bring up, I was going to bring up Jess's PowerPoint before mine. So I guess I should have been more prepared. Okay, so here we go. Share. Okay, do you see my VCHRP screen, the VCHRP screen on your screen?
Yes.
Okay, so let me go back. So if you're coming in as an employee, I just want to go over this. I guess I should preface this. I'm going to go over this because what we're finding is employees are uploading their proof of vaccination, those that are required to do so, and even employees who are not required to do so are uploading it, which is fine. But the piece that's seems to be missing is departments aren't going in and approving those uploads, which is something that has to get done. So I'm going to show you both pieces so you're familiar with them. And then hopefully by the end, we'll have more agencies and departments going in and approving their employees' uploads. So when an employee comes in, they obviously see the employee self-service homepage. They're going to click on personal details, COVID-19 vaccination status. And I'm using my own account just because I can share my own information. I don't want to share anybody else's. So if they are required to submit proof, or like I said, even if they're not, they can upload it. It's not going to hurt anything. They come down to the bottom portion of the screen. There's an upload vaccination exemption proof button. They can click that, choose from their device. And I have a vaccination card in here somewhere. There it is. Click the upload button and click done. So you can tell now, I can actually go in and view what I just uploaded, and it's telling me that it's subject to review. So what's happening is employees are uploading their proof. They're seeing this message subject to review, and it's there for days and days. And so they call us and they say, why is it not approved yet? So that's why I'm showing this to you today. So you can take it back to whoever is going to be responsible for the review on your end. So now I'm going to go into the screen that the department rep should be going into. You're going to need to go to the nav bar to get there and go on the main menu. VCHCM is the next menu selection. And then there's a page called VC COVID-19 vaccination status. Click on that. Sorry for all the background noise. I guess I should have gone into a quieter place. Okay, and then so I just did myself. So I'm going to enter my employee ID, bring that up. So now on from the department rep side, I can see everything that's going on with this employee. If you go to this vaccination proof section, this is where you can see the vaccination card that I just uploaded as an employee. If you click on that, it will show you what I just uploaded. If it looks good to you, the reason I used this example is because when I first came in to look at this card that an employee uploaded, I saw just one dose and I thought, oh, I need to deny that because they're not fully vaccinated. But then I saw it was a Janssen, you know, it was the one that only requires one dose. So just be very careful when you're reviewing these. If it is a Janssen vaccination, they, you know, those only require one dose, these should be approved. So go back to the page. I've reviewed it. So, and it looks acceptable. So I just approve and save. That's all that you have to do. Of course, you can also hit denied. And then there's, of course, a comments section in case you need to put comments in there. We've had employees upload Amazon receipts. So I actually had to deny one the other day because Amazon receipt didn't fit the bill. So I just put in the comments that it was not an appropriate proof of documentation to be approved. So anyway, that's it. That's how easy it is. And then of course there's queries that were developed to track all of this. If you need to refer to, if you need those query names, they're in the department rep user guide. So we created both an employee user guide and a department rep user guide. Both of those are on our COVID-19 resources webpage. You'll find both of those documents there. We have also uploaded the exemption forms, both the religious exemption and the medical exemption. If employees are looking for those, it's under the employee resources. And if you have any questions, just let us know.
Thanks, Tracy. So one thing I would add, just to kind of piggyback on that, is just to make sure that everybody is clear right now as to sort of in really broad terms, what does this current order that goes into effect, was actually in effect, but our absolute drop dead deadline to be fully compliant is next Monday. So again, it applies to our healthcare workers. It applies to those who work at the jail, juvenile facility, and anybody then who's assigned to those facilities. So that's custodial or IT services, anyone who might need to go, you know, and beyond, obviously, go into those facilities as a regular part of their work. Those individuals are the ones that we need to have the proof of documentation. And if we don't, absolutely by starting on Monday under the California Department of Public Health order, they are then required to not only continue to be masked and all those things, but they are required to test a minimum of once weekly, some job classifications twice weekly. We do need to be tracking that testing. It's a requirement of employment, meaning that, you know, if you are not testing and getting the providing proof of that testing each week, a person is not eligible to enter the facilities. So those will be things that I know there's many of you who are already working on these processes and are good to go. We're raising it more globally because, you know, it seems, as I'm sure you've all seen on the news, there's sort of exploration all over the state for expansion to other groups and other professions. So we're trying to keep everyone in the loop because there's always the potential that this could expand to job classifications that it doesn't currently. And so we want people to be familiar in case this process becomes applicable to you, or you have the occasional employee who does need to work in these facilities. For those employees who are occasional, as in maybe you have to go to the hospital once a quarter for some specific event, in those instances, those employees are classified under the order as more of visitors than employees assigned to the facility. And in those instances, the order requires that wherever possible, they need to test 72 hours in advance of that visit, appointment, whatever it is, and provide proof of the test upon their entry into the facility. You know, obviously, as you're considering whether people need to actually be at those facilities with this additional layer of testing that's required, this may be an opportunity to really explore. Does it really require people to go to the facility, or can we use, you know, teleconferencing and other things that are currently available to us to avoid some of those other things? If it can't be avoided, it's absolutely necessary that the person be in any one of these congregate setting facilities, then the employee will need to do the testing in ahead. Okay, so let's see here. So I think we have some questions, want to make sure that we've answered them all. So Tracy, thoughts as to whether we've answered them all?
No, I'll go over the VCHRP questions. So just to clarify, we do have an employee user guide and a department rep user guide, both on our COVID-19 resources webpage. These user guides do include screenshots and step-by-step instructions. There's a question about what VCHRP role is required to access that page, the department rep page. I believe it was given to all HR department reps, HR and benefits department reps. So whether you have one or both roles, you should be able to see that page. If not, let myself and Kelly Akers know and we can get you access somehow, I think. We'll work it out with you individually. And then there's a question about whether department reps will get an email if an employee goes in and uploads something. No, you will not receive an email. It's all done by queries. So you'll need to run those queries to identify which of your employees are in a submitted status and waiting for approval. And then the next question we got, if they are vaccinated, can they show vaccine instead of test? Or would they need both? Oh, maybe that's a question.
Maybe that's a question about maybe if they're a visitor. So
yeah, Catherine, if they're a visitor, like if we have a DDA that needs to go to a jail to question somebody or an investigator, but it happens pretty rarely, like you may not have 72 hours. So if they're vaccinated, can they just show their vaccine at the door? Or is that going to be the typical? What do we know?
They're going to need to upload their vaccination document into VCHRP.
Okay.
So they can't be considered vaccinated unless we as the employer have proof of that.
So but we could wait until that opportunity arises. Like we don't always have people going down there. And then am I supposed to communicate that somehow to like the sheriff's department or something like that? Or we just...
That's a good question. And I just want to really clarify on that. No, you do not need to clarify that. So what we've been trying to share, and we recognize this is super complicated because we have lots of different agencies and lots of different groups that then have crossovers into these current settings that are associated with these orders. We as county, as the county employer, are subject to this public health order. And as a result, basically every agency is responsible for adhering to this order for as it relates to your employees. So the sheriff's department will then have the understanding that the district attorney's office or IT services or anyone else is also requiring their employees to adhere by this order. You know, ultimately it is the responsibility and the onus is on the individual agency and your employees. You know, the understanding then at that point is that county employees who are going to these facilities are only being given the opportunity to go to these facilities by their home agency if they have provided the proper documentation and or are complying with the required testing. So we as a county as a whole are all subject to this mandate. We must adhere to it. Each agency is responsible for testing and tracking their employees who have any work responsibilities affiliated with the facilities that are currently under the order. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and I see that Liz also asked the same question. So, right. So, I mean, this is what it gets back to is, you know, the complication of trying to communicate all this information about testing and tracking, not only within your own agency, but then across agencies is far too complicated and too confusing. And again, each agency is responsible for the tracking and testing of their own people. So I know there's been some confusion, and understandably always with these orders that we get, as you all know, there's a lot of ambiguity, a lot of gray area, and everybody's doing their best to figure out workflows and policies that then comply. But, you know, the broader understanding is we as a county are held to the standard. Each agency is responsible for testing and tracking. And if your folks are going anywhere that it involves these congregate settings, you need to figure out within your agency who are those people, and they need to be made aware that they may not go to these facilities without complying with the order. So I think for those of you who have the crossovers right now, the important part for you between now and Monday is making sure you're very clear who are your people that have a need to go to these facilities as part of their assignment, and to make certain they understand that they can't go without being in compliance with the order. So, you know, it's if they're assigned to that facility all the time, you know, they're embedded over at the hospital, even though they work for your agency, well, then they need to be tested weekly if they don't have proof of documentation. If it's one-off, then an employee can fall under that visitor category and you can do the 72 hours in advance. but ultimately the responsibility, you know, if for who walks into those facilities, HCA is going to accept that if an RMA employee comes in, that RMA is testing and tracking in accordance with the order, and that responsibility will fall back to the owning agency.
And Catherine, if I could just jump in, it reminded me when you were talking, I forgot to point out on that department rep screen in BCHRP that there is a box, a checkbox for required. Those of you who have lots of employees who need that box checked, we already had the deadline for submitting your list to me so that I could have IT upload them. From this point forward, you will now need to go in and check those boxes for all of your employees that are required. That way, when you run your queries, it's only looking at those who are required, who have not yet submitted or who have submitted, whatever you're looking for. And then there's also a box that can be checked for exempt. So if you get an assigned exemption form, you can check them as exempt. That will also keep them off of your queries. Ultimately, I mean, we have a query that ultimately tells you who needs to be tested weekly. So the exempt will keep them off of that list. And the required will make sure they're on that list if they haven't submitted anything or been approved to be exempt.
And I'm going to just piggyback on that for 1 minute. So for those who ultimately right now, so that we have this requirement for the testing and tracking that must be fully operational as of Monday. And then very like within hours of CDPH giving us that order with some of those requirements, we got a second order or third order that indicated that healthcare workers must be vaccinated by September 30th. And to Tracy's point, that order, there is then an opportunity for healthcare workers to say, either because of religious beliefs or some medical condition that might prohibit them from getting the vaccine, that they are asking for exemption. They just want to, you know, again, and we're having these discussions right now, it's more singular groups, but we think it's important everyone understands it because there's always the possibility things may expand in time. If an employee who is required to be vaccinated provides either a religious beliefs or a healthcare exemption, then the accommodation that we are able to offer them is that they are allowed to continue with the weekly, or in some healthcare settings, it's biweekly testing. So if they say, I can't be vaccinated and here's my document in support of that, you know, the accommodation we want to make clear that is offered in relationship to that is we're accepting the documentation, fine. You know, you handle it as you would any other sort of an accommodation, communication and documentation, but that the accommodation then is they are then still subject. That's how the public health order reads, is that anyone exempt then must continue to do the testing every week. So just want to make sure that's real clear to everyone. Because again, I think, you know, these are sort of narrow discussions that have the potential to become broader discussions. I see that some people are super enthusiastic about the feedback I'm giving. I mean, the good news is, which I will say right now, on the exemption for the vaccination, to being put together a really simple sort of form, and the employees just need to provide you that form. Again, we do need to upload it and have documentation. If they're saying it's a medical exemption, they need to get that form completed by their doctor. You know, and again, there'll be some, you know, fact-specific discussions, but really the date is September 30th. So by September 30th, those who under the order must be vaccinated either have to give you the proof of vaccination or one of these two other forms, or it's going to necessitate that the manager is going to need to have a discussion with that person, because proof of vaccination is going, it's an employment requirement, that this, that is a requirement to be a healthcare worker in the state under this order. So let's see, I just wanted to go back and make sure. somebody asked a question about the how for the agency to provide testing results. So yes, we're going to talk about that a little bit in a minute. But of course, with the testing results, each agency is responsible for a couple different things. And one is that you're getting people tested. And I know, you know, for those to whom it is applicable right now, tremendous effort has been put forth to establish protocols for the testing itself. But you are responsible for getting them tested. And within the testing responsibility, then we also need to get the results of those tests. So whether it's directly through, some groups have a portal that they're able to log into with the lab that's doing the testing. Some other groups may be requiring the employee just to provide the test results back from the lab if they're getting it. But obviously, you know, if we end up with an employee who then comes back and says, oh, I'm positive, and you know, presumably those are going to be folks who are asymptomatic and they're positive. At that point, this is now an unvaccinated positive employee or any positive employee. We would then go, you know, have to sort of move out of the lane of the testing and tracking and go into the Cal OSHA quarantining and removing from the workplace, sending the notices and all those things. So just, which we will talk about in a minute, put together a little cheat sheet just to remind you about which COVID things still apply and which COVID things don't apply. And then I do see there's a question, are firefighters healthcare workers? Currently, the CDPH, there are a number of questions that are before CDPH from many different employer groups asking for clarification. They'd indicated they would be updating their FAQs. They have not done that since they issued the third order, I think, on August 5th. So currently, the definition of fire, the definition of congregate setting and healthcare worker does not include firefighters. Again, I think there's some possibility that as this begins to move forward, there will be sort of, you know, amended and versions, and it is possible that they could. But at the moment, there's nothing to indicate that they fall within the definition. It's a little bit of a gray area, but there is, they currently do not fall within the definition. So somebody else said, what documentation will we require if an employee submits an exempt request due to religious reasons? They're going to have to complete a form that is just a simple form. And, you know, again, like all things COVID, you know, they're attesting to the fact that this is true and correct. And then, you know, again, that form indicates that, you know, if the exemption is given for being fully vaccinated based on religious beliefs, the accommodation that is available to you then is to continue with the required testing. Okay. So I think that's it.
And Catherine, just real quick, those exemption forms are on our COVID-19 resources website, just in case anybody's looking for them.
Great. And just to be really clear right now, those two forms, just want to make sure I'm crystal clear on this because it's lots of information, only relate to healthcare workers who are currently being told under the newest order that they must be vaccinated by September 30th. So even if you have employees who go to the hospital, but they are not healthcare workers, they are not required to be currently to be vaccinated by September 30th. It is only healthcare workers who do direct patient care. So Phil asked the question about, yes, homeless shelters are included under congregate living facilities. That is true. Where this gets a little bit tricky is that those shelters are typically the locations themselves are operated by the state, and therefore it's their facility. So that kind of raises a little secondary issue, meaning that if our employees go to those shelters, we are going as vendors or visitors. And so it is to the group that owns the facility to be certain that any vendors or visitors coming to the facility who, you know, are in our case, not a county employee, are also following the tracking and tracing. So meaning that, you know, right now, if there's a particular vendor that comes in once a week to provide something at the jail, it is important that we're communicating with that contractor that their person cannot continue to come into the facility unless they have provided their employer with proof of full vaccination status, or that employer is testing that employee weekly. And so it is important to communicate that out to vendors you might be working with who are going into these facilities for anyone right now. If there's a lack of clarity of that part, as far as the hospital setting, jail, juvenile facility, if you have folks who come in routinely that on a vendor contract, you need to tell them it's their responsibility as the vendor and as the employer. You know, all employers are subject to this. This is an accounting rule. They too are subject to it. And it would be to them to figure out, you know, the status of their employees and if their employees are not vaccinated, to ensure us that they are testing and tracking on a weekly basis. Okay. So simple as usual as it comes to COVID. Nothing complicated here. All right. So to that point, I think we've just, sorry, Tracy, is there any other pieces you want to go over on this part?
Nope, I think that's it.
Okay. So kind of to that point, as I said, we thought maybe it would be helpful to, as we're unfortunately continuing to have this, and my guess is to some extent, for those of you who do have employees who start to go into these settings, the more the folks who are going to be required to test or tested, we're likely to find some asymptomatic people who are also positive. So kind of finding positive COVID cases is likely to uptick a little bit. So we wanted to make sure everybody was clear as to sort of what are the benefits and entitlements and requirements now in August of 2021 as it relates to COVID. And of course, always, you know, ever changing, but want to make sure that you at least feel comfortable with what you would need to do were you to have a positive now. So I'm going to turn it over to Jess, and he's just going to go over sort of an overview of that information.
All right. Good morning, all. If you didn't get too much information, here is more. So first off, we would like to say that this is kind of like the disclosure. This is how things are as of today, August 18th, 2021. There may be updates, there may be a changing or refining of definitions. So it's going to kind of make our lives a little bit harder. But on the last page of this slideshow, I have provided a resource page that links you to all of the FAQs regarding the COVID-19 emergency temporary standards. This is a page that I go to often. It's if any one of you have a question, I usually refer to that first, just so I am aware of things that haven't changed. So it's a good kind of tool to kind of refer to those pages as you will incur questions or situations. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so this slideshow will kind of go through a few things. It's going to be some of the revised ETS, the Emergency Temporary Standards, ETS, of some of the mandates that have been passed already. We're going to go through the changes. We're going to go through some of the work comp portions, if positive it was at work. And then we're also going to finally go through some of the pay that's associated with that if it's non-work related. Okay, so a quick snapshot of the changes that just happened in the last couple of months. So June 17th, the revision was approved by Gavin Newsom. Still changes July 26th to CDPH, mandating all state employees and healthcare workers show proof of vaccination by September 30th. That's what Catherine referred to earlier. This is something that is has changed and does have a deadline. So it's something that we need to just keep our eye on, especially when those revisions have deadlines. And then July 28th, CDPH recommends universal mask indoors, and CDPH is continuing to kind of make those revisions based on the number of cases and the increases as we see them go through. So even if you are fully vaccinated, it recommends that masking indoors would be beneficial to your health. Next slide. Okay, so part of the revise is testing of symptomatic employees. So if an employee is non-fully vaccinated, employers, will make testing available at no cost to the employees. There are testing sites in which we have, I guess, resources from. The testing sites can be as close to the workspace or the employees' homes for their convenience. And I know some will test on their own, but as long as we are providing those testing sites and giving them as a resource, then we would be compliant with this revision. So if they feel like they are symptomatic, then we could provide their testing. And I believe safety has provided a link to provide those that are nearest to either the work site, like I said, or the home. I can share that at a later time as well. That's not on this slide. Okay. So personal protective equipment, the employer must provide respirators N95 to non-fully fully vaccinated individuals. This is another thing that's kind of on our radar for those that are not fully vaccinated, more importantly, that we do not have the attestation on file. It's kind of important to have a differentiation between those two, is that a person can be fully vaccinated, but if we do not have the attestation on file attesting that they are, we consider them as not fully vaccinated. So it is important to go through those steps as Tracy went through earlier, because if the employee has that attestation on file and it's not fully approved, they would be considered not fully vaccinated as far as what we need to provide them. So those individuals, again, we provide them with respirators N95. Masks. Okay. All right. Again, the some tips just to kind of organize your workspace, because every agency may have different set of rules based on the controlling factor of what they need to be, I guess, following, you know, just as we went through earlier, just healthcare versus a regular agency, they'll have two different standards. So obtaining the self-attestation of the employee and record accordingly. So that's when those are placed on that pending, should be kind of gone through and approved. And like Tracy said earlier, if it is a document that maybe is questionable as an Amazon receipt, just make sure that you are clicking those documents so you are 100% sure that the proper documentation is on there. Because of the fact that it is a system, if you go and skip that step, then if a query is pulled, it'll automatically show what your approval status is. So if you did not check that document and you put approved for any reason, if we go through an audit and we find out that it in fact is an Amazon receipt, then we would be in compliant with that documentation piece. So it is important to go through those steps. Again, Catherine kind of mentioned the document visitors on worksite. So I won't kind of go through that again. And still, for those individuals that we do have either a positive at the workspace, the SB1159 and AB685 are still in effect. So there are some changes, but again, for all the work site exposures, SB1159 and AB685 are still in effect. So those documentations that you have to send out to employees, the workspace, the unions, will still have to be submitted accordingly. So that has not changed. Okay, so the exclusion pay is slightly different, only to the fact that the fully vaccinated employees may change the status. So it's basically the same as what we've been processing through. So the only thing that has changed is that if an employee is fully vaccinated and is asymptomatic, they don't have any symptoms, then they may have a different kind of recovery or just a different status than those that if they did have a work exposure and they were not fully vaccinated, then it's two status. So that's the only change as far as the pay portion goes. Next slide. So again, just to kind of make sure that we're all on the same page, the exemption for that pay is the employee receives work comp temporary disability payments, or the close contact is not work related. So they are the exceptions to that previous rule of the pay portion of a work site exposure. Okay, so the California Supplemental Paid Sick Leave is still in effect. It is set to expire September 30th, so that's just around the corner. Based on the numbers, I could only anticipate that it may be extended, but for now, it is set to expire September 30th. So we've gone through this kind of scenario before in previous presentations, so it's going to be the same thing. I think the only thing that has changed is the school closure from the previous supplemental pay that expired the 31st of December. The school closure has to be due to COVID, not simply that it's closed because of the situation it has to be like a COVID positive at the site, the school, and the school then in turn kind of shuts down. And so that is the school closure portion. One thing to kind of note is the natural disaster pay, if it still is, if they have not used it yet this year, because the natural disaster pay is set to expire once the whole pandemic is called off, so it's still in effect. The NDP and supplemental paid sick leave run concurrently. So if an employee used their 40 hours of NDP prior to January 1st, it does not count toward the 80 hours. If they use the NDP from January 1st to current, those hours do count toward the 80 hours of SPSL entitlement. So for that, it is important to have the employee complete the proper paperwork. The SPSL paperwork does have the caveats. I believe it's on top that does kind of spell this out, saying that if it hasn't been used, then it will be used concurrently. So it's important to kind of highlight that to the employees so they are not under the impression that they get the 40 hours plus the 80 hours. And this is the resource page. Again, this is the pages that I most frequent once I get a question, just in case something is updated, and it is updated, I would say regularly based on our environment. It's when something happens, they usually take a few days for it to reflect on their website. But for the most part, since I've been looking at it, they do have an asterisk or something red bold on the top of these pages saying something is changing and it hasn't been reflected yet. So it's important to kind of look through those kind of asterisks when you are looking at these resource pages for the most up-to-date information when we're providing it to employees or referring them to our process to complete for either the closure or the exposure, any part of our responsibilities that we have to have under these kind of processes. All right. And I know that there was a few questions, so.
Yeah, let's see here. Thank you, Jess. Super helpful. Yeah, and I think one other point I want to make as we're just getting through this is just a reminder too. So to Jess's point and sort of the things that still apply, if you have an employee who's positive, you have to fill out the positive notification that gets emailed to risk management. Then you have to go to the CalOSHA notices and you know, if there's any close contacts and or they were at the work site, you need to send those. The other thing that you need to do is if the employee tells you, I'm COVID positive and I'm confident I got that at work, you need to give them a workers' compensation claim form. So those are the I think the important pieces to kind of high level, and then you'll have to get into the nuts and bolts, which is in his PowerPoint about what kind of pay and those types of things. I mean, just a reminder that an employee who's fully vaccinated, who has close contact at work or close contact anywhere, I should say, with somebody who's COVID positive, is not required to quarantine as long as they are asymptomatic. So currently under Cal OSHA, you're looking at the notifications, anyone who had the close contact, if they're fully vaccinated, and fully vaccinated as defined by us, is either they've provided their full documentation of their vaccination because they're subject to this current CDPH order for healthcare settings or congregate settings, or if they're not subject to that, then they've provided us with an attestation that's on file. So otherwise, if we don't have those things, then we have to deem them, not fully vaccinated or unvaccinated. And those folks would be required to quarantine if they have a close contact. Okay. So, Shannon, you asked the question about whether we would message out about the expiration of SPSL. My guess would be yes, if in fact SPSL expires. So I think to Jess's point, it seems unlikely that there wouldn't be some extension based on the current increase in cases throughout California. You never know. I hope for all of us that if there is a decision to extend, that the extension is in real time, as opposed to what happened with SPSL, where they put it in place in April and said, oh yeah, by the way, it applies going back to January. So I'm really hopeful that if they're going to extend it, they'll do it, sometime in early to mid September and let everybody know. And then we will know whatever we have. But it's a fair point that I think, yes, if it doesn't get extended, we will at least need to send out some kind of notification saying, that is no longer available. And evaluate again for everyone what the things are that are available at that point. Okay, and this relates to thank you all for the website with the resources. And as always, this meeting is being recorded. We will put that on our on the intranet on the DAM COVID resource page, along with all of the PowerPoints that were presented today. So you can find all those things at any time at that location. Someone asked, is a vaccinated person who has a positive person in the household per Cal OSHA, can they return to work since the employee is vaccinated? Yes, as long as the employee is asymptomatic. So Cal OSHA says close contact with the positive does not prohibit you from being at work as long as you have no symptoms. So the thing we would need to make clear to that employee is, if you at any point start to develop symptoms, you need to report that to us immediately. And at that point, you need to remove yourself from the work site. I think in all these cases, again, what I would just say, as we continue to sort of have ebbs and flows in our COVID experiences, is wherever possible, we want to try to, think outside the box and offer reasonable suggestions. If you have an employee and they're fully vaccinated and they have a positive person in the home and they could be teleworking during that time, that may be a suggestion that if they're willing to accept that, that might make, everyone feel a little more comfortable. You can't require it, but you can certainly have those discussions of they could voluntarily telework. You could look at what options there are. So I think we want to continue to always in this, shared experience, try to find things that make sense if there's alternatives that everyone can agree make sense, then I think we should definitely explore those. So, and if there's questions about that, that's what we're here to help. If you have a strange fact pattern and you want support in understanding that. Great. And so thank you all for putting up the resource information for the rest of the group. if anybody has trouble finding anything after the fact, again, let us know and we're happy to point you towards that stuff. See. So, fair question. For unvaccinated employees that need to get tested weekly during county time, is county time referring to SPSL hours? What if the employer no longer has SPS hours remaining? So currently, the way that we are doing for those who are subject to the mandatory weekly testing, those agencies are working on opportunities for the employees to actually procure the test while at work. So we wouldn't even require the SPSL hours. There'd be nothing, there's nothing there. It's, we have to pay for them to do it, and it's not SPSL. And that's why we're exploring, you know, easier ways for individuals to be able to do it, you know, as you walk into the building that you're assigned to. If you can just pick up a test, self-administer the test, drop it in, you know, a basket, a bucket, or whatever, and then they send that stuff off. That's really the things that we're looking at. You know, you might have some employees who are looking for a different type of test or another thing. That would be a separate discussion, but for, we are providing testing during work hours at the facilities where it's required. Okay. So yeah, if there's not any, will the county be providing more home test kits? If an agency has a required need for testing employees, use some agencies who have sort of the one-off options of visitors, et cetera, are looking at the home test kits. If your agency is one of those groups, you can reach out to Jennifer Peters in risk management and she can assist you with that. Do I have any understanding that there's a broader discussion about just sending them out to send them out? I don't. That doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but I have no indication that that's the case at this time. So, okay. If other things roll in, we'll try to do them as we can, but just wanted, oh, do you know what we do with the expired tests? Give a call to Jennifer Peters and you can get that information from her, Gia. Mm-hmm. Okay, so before we go, I just wanted to be able to give our last few minutes to Tracy so she could say her goodbye. But before she does, I just wanted to say my personal thank you to Tracy. She has always been an amazing collaborator, colleague, friend. This has been a really hard 15 plus months, and I've always been able to just count on Tracy to support and collaborate and innovate. So I am going to miss you. I wish you nothing but the best. And I now give you your opportunity to say your last DAM words to this group.
Thank you, Catherine. And thank you, everybody, for all your kind messages. They really mean a lot to me. I've been with the county. Okay, I won't get emotional. I've been with the county since I was 20 years old. So most, over half of my life, I've been at the county. So I view all of you as family, which is making it way more harder to leave. But I will miss you all.
Well, we're going to miss you too. And I can't believe you've been here for more than half your life. It's amazing. But a life well lived. So I know for the group, just in total, we're going to miss you. And I know everybody just wishes you nothing but the best. And we're hoping you have a lot of guest rooms in Tennessee because you're going to have a lot of visitors.
Yep, y'all come out.
Well, thanks, everybody. So we'll leave it up for a minute or two so people can throw their chats in so Tracy can save those all for herself. And then we will plan on doing this again come September, and hopefully we get to talk about something new and different. So
they didn't want to leave. I had to kick out quite a few people.
They wanted to say their goodbyes.
Oh, that was still, so sweet.
You're still recording too.
Oh, thank you.